Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the new screensavers is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
A 3D scan of your face, an IoT home tour, and a $100 toy ball. Live from the Twit Studios in Petaluma, California, it's the new screensavers.
Screensavers, episode 164, recorded on July 7th, 2018. Leo Laborde here.
Alex Lindsay.
Look at it, Alex Lindsay. And thank you to Mark. Mark and Emily are visiting us. They're from Tulsa, Oklahoma. Nice to see you. Good job, Mark. Mark says this is his dream come true. Emily says it's her worst nightmare. And it's amazing how one experience
could have... But she still loves him.
Completely different. No, I'm just teasing him. Thank you for doing our show open. Hello, Alex.
Hi.
You haven't done this show a whole lot of times.
This is my third time.
I love it when you do it.
I love being on. I'm local, you know.
When... You are all over the world. I mean, make your domicile nearby, but you are all over the world. Alex, of course, a regular on Mac Break Weekly, and we were just looking at some early Twits. One of the earliest Twit participants. You helped us do video back in 2005.
We should do video, and then Leo said yes, and I was like, I don't know how to do it exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know quite how to do this yet, but I had a couple days.
And you've made a business, quite a good business out of that, which is really great. I quickly tired of video.
And we stopped. And now look at you.
Yeah, and then we set up a studio. But every time you're here, you bring us new toys, video toys, production toys. So we're going to talk some about that. In fact, I think you're going to show us some more. When we were on MacBook Week, you did a 3D scan of my face.
I did. And you know, the last time I was on the new screensavers, we were talking about how to capture locations. So how to with LiDAR and so on and so forth.
That's right. Yeah.
So I thought we'd make it a little more personal today. So what we're going to do is talk about capturing our face, capturing our whole body with what we call photogrammetry.
So you can do what?
Well, we're going to be more interested in having ourselves in the virtual world as we move forward. So
I could have a Leo body in a second life or something.
Not something you need today, but something you might want to be thinking about for the next couple of years.
We can make some improvements if that's all right. Apple is selling a $100 ball. They've got the exclusive on the Play Impossible game ball. Is this worth $100 for a ball you could buy for 50 cents? Oh, but there's some special stuff inside. Alex and I will play. Actually, we were having so much fun, we didn't want to stop.
Yeah, exactly. Playing. We almost missed the show.
Yeah.
Also, Megan Maroney will be showing us some of her favorite smart devices in her IoT crib.
And if you're hitting the road this summer, Jason Howell has some. He loves traveling. He's a camper. He's got some tech travel tips, including a power pack you could club a bear with.
We'll also answer some of your questions around video production, video collaboration tools, must-have apps, educational resources. I got a couple opinions. I don't know if they're really answers.
He knows it all. Did you see my new toy? This is a IBM keyboard. So this, in 1990, this was state-of-the-art. This thing weighs about like 4 or 5 pounds. It's really heavy. 104-key, classic IBM keyboard, buckling spring. I want to type so you can hear how a buckling
clack.
So this, what I didn't know, I always knew the name buckling spring, and we've been talking about keyboards like this for years. Northgate, or was it Omnigate, made some, and then now there's the Cherry keys and all but
keys.
I don't think every keyboard nowadays has a switch with a rubber dome, and sometimes louder, sometimes softer. This is called a buckling spring keyboard. It literally has a spring, like a regular spring in it. And you know what happens with a spring? If you compress it too far, it buckles. It's like a defect. It shoots its hip out. Well, this is a switch that when you press it, it buckles the spring out. It hits the switch, and that's the key. So it gives you a really nice, solid, and loud. Can you hear that? I feel like you still hear this keyboard mostly at airlines when you're saying, I've missed my flight. Well, let me see. I might be able to get you on through Dallas. And you hear that
I think they leave sound. It there just to make you feel like they're working. Otherwise, they'd be like, I don't know if he's really doing anything back there.
Yeah, they're really just doing this. Right?
There'd probably be a lot more upset passengers if they did it with an iPad. They'd be like, I don't really know.
It doesn't no feel flights, like sorry.
When I type, I have a kind of a similar keyboard at home, and when I type on it, I feel like I'm working so much harder.
So this, believe it or not, this cost me $200. The guy, and in fact, he's at clickykeyboards.com, and they say, quickly get these because it's harder and harder to find these. This was made in 1990. It's older than some of our studio audience. And he takes it. He cleans it. In this case, it had plastic rivets. He removed those, put M2 screws in to make it more solid. It's got a big, heavy plate in the back. That's one of the things that makes it heavy, but also makes it solid. This is the classic white label M. And it's pretty cool. There's only one defect that I can see. And I guess somebody pressed the left arrow so much they wore out the key. And so it has a replacement key on it. But otherwise, this is pristine. I'm very excited. I can't wait. I don't know what I'm going to do with it. It doesn't have a Windows key or a Mac command key, so I'll have to do some key mapping to make it functional. But I just thought I'd show you my new toy. There you go. Clicky keyboard.
Wonderful.
Yeah, he does this himself. It's kind of neat. Top stories, Twitter in the month of July. No, I guess we're in the month. In the month of June, killed 70 million troll and spam and bot accounts. They're doing about 1 million a day right now. This
well, everybody's
is incredible.
Tightening up. Did it affect you very much?
No, I don't think so. That's the interesting thing. I guess some people would be heavily. If you were followed by a lot of bots,
right,
you'd be affected. I lost a few hundred. I was looking at my stats, a few hundred followers this month.
I didn't lose.
Not more than normal.
Mine didn't change at all. I wonder if it's the kind of people who are like paying for, you know, like
followers.
The services that said, hey, yeah, we can give you 100,000 followers or 200,000 followers.
You'd be hurt bad, yeah.
Yeah, you probably, that's probably the people that are taking a big hit.
Do you notice that it's a more civil place or a nicer place than it was before? Does it seem better? It doesn't seem that way to me.
It seems pretty much the same.
Yeah.
You know, like it's...
it's still an outrage factory. Yeah.
You know what they say. You know, they say that anger leads to hate. You know, or fear leads to anger.
Fear
anger leads to hate. Hate leads to Twitter.
Twitter. I think Yoda said that. Netflix, speaking of hate, apparently a lot of the reviews of Netflix shows were filled with junk. So they're just, this is every site eventually does this. They're removing online reviews in August. You'll no longer be able to post written views as the end of this month, and then all you'll get is a thumbs up and thumbs down. I didn't even know, I'll be honest, that you could do reviews. I've never seen reviews.
I think functionally the problem is that it made sense when Netflix was primarily sending you things and you were going to a web page, but now you never really have a place that you really interact.
I don't. Yeah.
You're watching it on your TV from your. What that means is a very small percentage of the people are doing all the reviews.
The weirdos.
It's not really representative of the viewers anymore.
Makes perfect sense. This is a bad bug, and I don't know how this happened. I can't even imagine how it happened. But apparently some Samsung phones were spontaneously sending your pictures to random contacts without any warning, without any notice.
As a note, if you're thinking about the importance of this, I would rather have my phone spontaneously combust.
Yes. Yes.
You
don't get to pick which pictures go to whom. I can only imagine the nightmare. The forums, according to a Samsung spokesperson, they're aware of the reports that technical teams are looking into it. The forums indicate that it's Galaxy S9 and S9 Plus devices. I have an S9 Plus. I better go check to see if it's been sending out. Because you could get in a lot of trouble.
Oh, yeah.
In fact, isn't that a rude thing to do? Don't you ever, does it ever happen to you? You give your phone to somebody to say, oh, let me show you pictures of my kids. And you pull up the picture of your kid, and then they start swiping. Have you ever seen that? And you got to grab the thing quick. Go, no! See, that's not my kid. So,
right.
I don't know why that's, never mind. Well, oh, God, let's take that right off. So this is worse. This is without even, and there's no recall. There's no, it's done. Imagine sending your boss pictures. All right, let's talk about 3D scanning. You brought some software. Last time we did this on MacBreak Weekly, you used an iPhone app, and you used the iPhone 10's depth sensor to scan my face.
And it was in beta back then, And now it is in.
It's out.
It's
you
out.
Can get it?
You can get it. It's called Belus 3D.
B-E-L-U-S?
Yep.
I'm getting it right now.
And what you can do, here, you can see, yeah, those are some of the models generated from it. So if I get my, in the right position.
So you're going to, it's modeling your face.
So what I do is I get my face kind of into that space here, and I click on it, and it's going to tell me to look, and I just go.
Okay, that's not it. That's just a... Just to describe how to do it. It's not on the App Store.
It should be.
Oh, okay. Maybe I'm just not seeing it.
Maybe it's only showing up for me because I'm still in the beta. I went to the App Store and it was there.
Okay.
Before I had to use the side
but
loader.
But the plan is to make this available.
This all white is a bug in, I think, 12.
But you did get it captured. Now, what you do is you do that and then you email it to yourself and you're using a different... Is this a Belus program?
No, this is Cinema 4D. So
that's
I'm just
a standard
using Cinema,
3D rendering.
Standard. So I just literally just opened this
Holy
up in
cow.
Cinema 4D. So that is, that is the...
That's the rendered version.
Yeah, that's the rendered version. You can see if I jump out of it, but if I... Oops, I accidentally copied it there. But you can see I can move it around. There's like a shell. I'm a shell of myself. But that is a very accurate 3D model.
Could you get the back of your head too? I mean...
Yeah, this app is kind of a start if you wanted to have a front avatar. You can. There's definitely other ways to get the back of your head, but not with this app yet. So
let me see what the flattened.
Oh, the flattened texture map. Yeah. So what it does is it generates a texture that is your. The texture is kind of a. Oops. So if you wanted to put me on a mug, this is.
You could just
my
wrap
mug,
it right around
my
any
mug
cylinder.
On a mug.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, you could simply print that out, which is kind of funny.
You know, so. I wonder if you could use this to fool Face ID, because that's pretty realistic.
So.
No?
I think you'd have trouble, because Face ID is looking for warmth.
And it's also doing depth.
Yeah.
This is 2D. It's flat.
Right, yeah. I think it would have... You might be able to print something that then you figured out some way to get the right... I mean,
you'd have to 3D print something, yeah.
But I think that a lot of times, again, this is the kind of thing that, especially things that are an app grabbing avatars, are going to be really fun. If you think about the Memoji, this is a step away from being able to scan yourself and have yourself actually truly a Memoji. You know, and so...
Now, it looks like they also sell a camera.
That's for the Android.
Okay.
So Android and Windows, they don't have the depth sensor, so you can do it on the iPhone much cheaper. It's on the Android, it's like $500. And that's basically a Kinect. I mean, that's essentially doing what a Kinect does there.
So
now,
they do say it's now out. Belus 3D, one word. Oh, yeah, there it is, Face app. Okay, good. I'm going to get this.
You can download it for free and play with it. You just can't export the model without paying something like $8 a month or $24 a year or something like that. But you can...
But
you can download
business.
It and play with it. You should download it and play with it. If you have an iPhone 10,
this is awesome.
It's
does require the sensing in iPhone 10, or you'd have to buy some hardware.
Yeah, yep. So again, this is something that I think that it's worth playing with now, and there's lots of fun things that you could do with it. You can print. One thing I haven't gotten around to is printing a mask. You know, once I have that data, I can. You know, my thought is you could cut it out and print and not a me. I'd probably do it.
Now, do I turn my head? What do I do?
You hit start. There you go. And then it'll give you a guide. Oh, there you go. Now it'll just say, look up at your camera and then turn slowly as far as you can, as far as your neck will stretch.
Oh.
There you go.
Well, you shouldn't make faces, though. So now I'm going to be sneering out of the left-hand side of my face.
And we'll see.
So we'll see if I get the white one.
Are you beta as well?
No.
Oh.
No, but see, they're having this problem.
There's some kind of rendering issue. It actually captures it. There's a rendering issue that I did after I did the update, so I don't know. I'm not sure what's causing that at the moment.
Huh.
But
anyway,
but it's a it is capturing the texture map.
That's really cool.
That's a recent little issue that we started having there. So, but you'll get this texture map out. You could hook it up to your 3D printer, print your head. You know, if you wanted to, if you really felt like you needed that. So that's getting the face. The next step, of course, is how do you get the whole body? So, and the reason you might want the whole body is you might want to have again, I think that when we talk about VR and AR, having actual characters, actual people is going to be important, whether it's yourself or actors that you want to bring into the scene. And this would be useful for education. Imagine, you know, recreating a Civil War scene, or in the case that we're experimenting with, a Cambodian scene. You want to get the actual people rather than modeling them. So what we did is I have some friends, Pixel Gun 3D, that or Pixel Gun, that basically they are down in San Rafael. They've got this an RV that
Whoa!
Has 146
this
cameras.
This is an RV.
Pixel Gun Studios, yep.
Every one of those dots is a camera.
Those dots are tracking markers. Those are markers so that it just knows. It uses that to calibrate where all the cameras are. So there's 146 cameras that are getting wides, close-ups, you know, and those dots basically are a little, they're actually a 10-bit code that tells you this is marker number or whatever. That way, when the program, in this case, PhotoScan, does its calibration, it knows exactly what it's looking at, because otherwise it's a lot of white.
So here's an actor.
Doing the scan.
Now, does it... Wow. Does it... Those look like fancy, expensive DSLR cameras.
They're not super expensive DSLRs, but they are a lot of DSLRs.
A lot of pixels.
I mean, that's still $100,000 of cameras, at least, or $200,000 of cameras. And so... It's a lot of cameras.
They don't need to be at waist level, though. It looks like it's at the top of the head and then below him.
They're all the way around. So you'll look at them. They're all the way up and down, all the way around him. And but the hard part is that because they're taking him instantly, he can do things like this where he might be moving a little bit.
It freezes him
in that space. And so it's a great... And this is what, when you watch the games, when you watch some of the real-time games, the sports games, this is exactly the kind of studio that's used.
This is a Cambodian dancer doing Cambodian
positions. Yeah.
Positions.
We're doing some experimentation. I was in Cambodia last year for a couple weeks and decided I wanted to try to launch a project.
146 cameras.
Around Angkor Wat. So we, so anyway, so the...
Now what, again, you're going to get a 3D model...
Right.
That you would do what with? Can you animate it?
Yeah, so what we're going to do next is take our subjects, and we're going to put bones in basically attach animation tools underneath and attach the mesh that we create to those bones, those animation tools. Then we can now do motion capture and have them walking around and possibly even doing
Cambodian
dances.
Would you use the same camera array to do the motion as well? Or
no, that's a motion capture. Maybe the next time I come, we'll
mocap's another a third thing.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. So, but we'll maybe the next time we'll show a little bit of all of this together. But the mocap can be applied once we put the bones inside of the character and attach the meshes to the bones. Then we take the motion capture and drive the bones, which drives the mesh. And then we render it out into the scene. This is just the beginning.
At the beginning of the show where you might want an image of yourself for a virtual world, like a Second Life kind of world. Is what you get with this 146 camera array sufficient for that?
Oh, it's way more than what you need.
Okay.
So
you'd have to add expressions and motions to it.
You would need to add a lot more detail to it. So basically, once we have the base... And here's the 3D model. And this is, if I hit render, it'll render it out here. And
it looks, by the way, as soon as you render it, much more detail in there.
So there's the model there. It's kind of
uncannily realistic.
Yeah, and so you can see that it's, you know, and that's the kind of thing that's hard to model is really getting something that is, you know, that really captures all the little wrinkles and the sense of it. And this is a uncleaned, I mean, the model hasn't been really cleaned up yet. It's just a really rough scan. So, but that would take a long time to create a 3D model that accurate. Now, if you think about what's going to happen here with these kinds of characters is imagine being able to go to a location, maybe historical Cambodia or somewhere else, and be able to look down and see people walking and so on and so forth in AR, or have your VR goggles on and feel like you're there.
Right.
Those are the kind of things that are going to be possible in the next year.
The other thing I've seen this twice now, once in New York, and I just saw one somewhere, I think L.A., there are booths, I think these will be malls at some point too, where they have arrays like this, and then for $100, they print a 3D model of you. Not big, but, you know, a 10-inch tall 3D model of you.
Yeah.
And you could do that with this as well.
Oh, with either Bellus for small, like, little bits of it,
right.
Or with Pixel Gun, the type of thing that Pixel Gun Studios does, you could absolutely. They have prints of all kinds of some of the celebrities and so on and so forth. They actually made chocolates. There's some of the... There's some of the prints.
Look at that.
There's Snoop. Yeah.
So there's a place in New York called Gulliver's Gate, which I highly recommend, down in Times Square. It's tiny little models of the world, and they were made all over the world. But there's people in these. And if you go to Gulliver's Gate, you can become a person.
Oh, that's funny.
In these models, they have an array that takes the picture of you. They print it out. And then, see these little people?
They're all people who came.
They're people who visited. Yeah. That's it's not great. All of them, but they, but as time goes by, the more and more of them will be little people. Real people.
And it really is, you know, that is a, the, you know, Pixel Gun has gotten to a point where they've really got it refined down to a science. But it is something that is just a collection of cameras at this point. There's a program called PhotoScan that you can actually download if you want to play with it. It's free to download, yeah. And you can play with the demo as long as you want. You just can't save.
You know what we have to do sometime? Because I remember, well, it's been now almost 20 years ago, you came to the Screensavers and you drew dots on my face. We should get a montage as this has evolved over 20 years
yeah.
from the time that you had it by hand. You draw yeah. dots on my face and then by hand take pictures
oh,
all
man.
Around me. That was a lot of work.
That was a lot of work.
To this.
It's yeah,
much more accurate, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right, coming up in just a bit, we're going to play a little bit with this. We're going to test our hand-eye coordination, see if a $100 toy, Apple only sells it, requires an iPhone or an iPad, is worth the money. But first, Megan Maroney with some IoT devices she's using at home right now.
Welcome to the inside of my smart home. This is the Schlage Smart Lock, which happens to be the only device I have that works with HomeKit. So I could lock it like this. Boring. Or I could do this. Hey, lock the door.
I'm on it. Your front door is locked.
Or I could use the Home app on my watch. Pretty cool. Now we have these two cute little neighbors here, the Neato Smart Vacuum and the Yunmai Smart Scale. They're friends. Ask Neato to stop cleaning.
What are you stopping then?
Did I show you this camera that was recording you on the outside? This is the Yee camera, and it will follow, if it sees motion, it will follow you around. See? It's like one of those paintings where the eyes follow you around, except the eyes are really following you around and sending the video up into the cloud. This is one of the many brains of my smart home, the Echo Show, one of my favorite devices because it has a screen, and I can use it to make video calls with anyone I want or to drop in on Jerry's office in Twit to find out what Jerry and Anthony are doing, which is always interesting.
I'm not that innocent.
Here's our Sony TV, which is an Android TV that we have hooked up to an Apple TV, which can be confusing. Works with the Android TV, so I could say, turn on the TV.
Sorry, something went wrong.
So here's the Apple TV if I wanted to use that. Turn on the TV, please. I love my Apple TV because I can...
Sorry, something went wrong.
Okay, we heard you the first time. Thank you. I can't use voice with the Android TV, but I can with the Apple TV. So I could say, open YouTube and watch the new Screensavers.
Sorry, what device?
There we go. And I can see our friend Flo on the new Screensavers. Stop.
Sorry, what device?
If you ever feel like throwing your smart devices just out the window, just know I too have been there. There's nothing a little plug, unplug and plug back in will solve. You're always still in control. Ah, the HomePod. I really looked forward to this device, but the truth is she just sort of sits over here gathering dust. That was frightening. And I bet you're wondering how secure it is to have this device that unlocks my door right next to an open window. Well, let me show you. Say I was a criminal outside the window. Hey, unlock the front door.
I can't unlock secure accessories here.
See, Apple's thought of everything. This is the Echo Plus. And the Plus means that it has a smart hub inside. Ideally, if you get this, you could just say, find my smart devices.
I couldn't find any new smart home devices.
So, yeah, that's it. So, yeah, I'm gonna go now. See you later. Hey, lock the door.
You know, people might think, oh, gosh, having a Bluetooth lock, that's insecure because maybe somebody could hack it or whatever.
Because keys are so secure.
Well, notice her front door has a big pane of glass on it.
Exactly.
It's all just a suggestion. Don't come in here.
It's keeping honest people honest. And
yeah, and if you're a crook, you just a little hammer, a little silver hammer to the glass, and it's over anyway. No. All right, let's play. It's time to play with the impossible ball. This is a they come in two colors. This is the purple one. There's also a green one. Apple has an exclusive on this. By the way, this is inflated. It even has a hole for a pin. So it's just like any game ball. Well, not exactly, because it also has holes on the other side that you charge it. And this is the interesting thing. This is the charging device. It has two AA batteries in it, and it will charge the ball all the way up to 100% in 20 seconds. And that tells me it's a supercapacitor in here and that they are driving it very quickly. They say you can play with this ball for 2 hours on a 20-second charge. I've paired it to my iPad here. Okay. Let's go. And you can
Game Ball LEO connected.
Oh, I named it LEO, so I know it's already connected. And we can play some games. You want to play a game with me?
Let's do it.
Shall we play a game? All right, there are a lot of different games. Impossible Showdown. It has games for head-to-head play. Group Game Ball Fun. Divide into two teams and play silly challenges with your friends. Well, there's only two of us. Do you want to? Should we try it?
Sure.
Okay, I have one ball.
Into two teams.
Okay, you're on one team.
All right.
I'm on another team.
Teams take turns spinning the game ball to select a random challenge.
Okay.
The first team to win 5 challenges takes the game.
Okay. All right.
One team spin the game ball to start the wheel and pick a random challenge.
You're going
to
be the red team, so go ahead, spin the wheel. And then see, notice it's got an accelerometer in it. Overhead toss and catch.
Price is Right thing going on here.
Is the game, yes.
Stand back to back with a partner.
I'll pretend.
Uh-oh. All right,
okay.
All right.
Okay.
Toss the ball overhead and have your partner catch it.
Oh, you ready?
Hold on, I gotta, here. Oh.
The most catches in 30 seconds wins.
Okay, ready?
Okay, ready.
Red team's turn to play. Red team, take the ball and shake to confirm that you are ready. 10, 9, 8. Seven,
I wish I had a
six,
real human voice
five,
instead of Siri,
four,
but I guess that's...
3, 2,
okay,
one,
now I have to catch it.
Go.
Wait, oh, I caught it. Oh, this is party fun. Oh! Oh, it knows you dropped it. That's pretty impressive.
Whoa.
Thank you, Emily. All right.
Ah!
Okay, we did it 6 times, and you get the idea. Oh, all right.
Oh, all right, you just go like this.
Let's just stop. Okay, so that's one game.
There's
exploratory science, too. And by the way, you get daily missions.
Earn extra airtime with daily missions.
Oh.
Check daily for the newest one.
Do you want to do a mission?
Sure.
When you complete them, your airtime grows.
We get more airtime. Don't know what that means. 25 airtime, no streak bonus. Get to level 3 airtime. Total completed 1 mission. I guess we've already done a mission. We did it without knowing it. Let's do some of the other things we have here. That was party time. I'm going to go back home. All games. There is a science. You want to do sport lab?
Sure.
All right.
Toss your game ball to see key metrics.
So this is kind of fun. We did this earlier. I'll skip.
Select the metric you want to hear.
So this is the metrics. You can measure
4 miles per hour.
Speed, 3, RPM, airtime, height, or catch force.
13.
Let's try height. See how high you can throw.
Height.
hard. We have a
8.3 feet.
Very nice, Alex. You want to try spin? Whoa.
2.1.7.
Oh. I don't know.
That was a little one. Let's try spin. Alex is the master of this.
Toss it higher. 673 rotations per 812. 694. 864. 816.
Would you? Okay, 816 is the one to beat here.
864.
864. 95.
Toss it higher. 252. 817.
Whoa! Whoa. A good cautionary tale.
595.
Oh, it's...
1,100.
Whoa! Oh, that's because I tossed it a distance, though.
873.
Oh, sorry.
Toss it higher. 1,396. 753.
All right. You get the idea. By the way, it didn't hurt when it hit me. It's a fairly soft ball. It's fairly compact. There seem to be a lot of different things you can play here. Let me give you some stats before we go on. It's Bluetooth. That's how it pairs. Bluetooth 4, and somehow it just saw it immediately. Email is not configured. I guess I was trying to email the results to my mom. Mom, you'll never guess what Alex and I did today. We threw the ball. You use AA batteries, the game ball capacitor, up to 2 hours, 200 recharges from a single set of AAs. That's pretty good. Charge times 20 seconds, standby time 6 hours. It's I don't know how you describe the size of that. It's like a softball.
It's a little bit bigger than a softball.
Yeah.
I'm guessing that they made it slightly different than everything else so it doesn't get, like...
used as a softball, yeah. Because it would probably break it if you hit it really hard with a bat.
Though I do want one that's like a baseball size. That'd be fun. That's true. Like a baseball one? Well, even not. Yeah, the problem is you'd hit it.
You want to play a water balloon toss game? Imagine your game ball is a water balloon. See how far you can toss it, but you must catch it softly.
Oh.
Okay. Each toss has to be longer than the one before. Yeah. Yeah, it's like throwing eggs.
Toss the game ball and catch it softly.
All right. Ready? Okay.
630 milliseconds. 649. You need to toss it farther. Your total score is 1,279 milliseconds.
Okay, that's our high score.
That's
Let's do it again.
That's a new high score.
Here we go. Start close.
Okay.
472 milliseconds. 590. 767. 886. You need to toss it farther.
We got to do a higher.
Your total score is 2,717 milliseconds.
Now, what do you think? You have kids that are the target for this.
I can see them playing it. I don't know. I have a hard time. I can see them playing it for an afternoon and thinking it's really cool, and then taking it out every time their friend showed up. Like, right. Hey, look at the ball I got. Pull up the iPad and do the thing.
It's the same market that played the Merlin games. Remember with Simon with the electronic thing? Or remember the Bop It? You probably don't remember this. This was big when my kids were young, where it would tell you to do something and spin it, bop it.
Remember you had, what was it, surgery? What was it called?
Yeah, Operation.
Operation.
Yeah.
So in the grand scheme of there are many games we can play on a Saturday afternoon with our friends, this would fit well into that.
I'll take it home and see if Michael and his friends... My fear is that after about the age of 12, they're going to destroy it.
Yes.
They're going to see if we can break this thing. Yes. And I don't know how tough it is. It is expensive. That's the other negative. And it requires an iPhone or an iPad to play a game. And that's kind of silly that you have to have...
A lot of kids have them.
But a lot of kids have them. There's some fun things you can do with it. We didn't even come close to touching all the games. There's Skyscraper, Toss High, and Beat the Clock. There's the Hot Tater. You want to play a Hot Potatoes? We'll do one more game. Don't get caught holding the ball when the game randomly ends. 3, 2, 1, go. All right, we don't want to... Whoa, Hot Potato, Hot Potato! Ah! Oh!
You're out. Toss the game ball to start
who's out.
The next round.
It was in the air when it exploded. Okay.
You jerk. Toss the game ball to start the next round.
This is kind of fun. I could see. Oh!
Ah! about to start.
I can see how that'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I have to say, I kind of like it. $100 really is a stopping point. On the other hand, if you've got $100 to blow, and or maybe you're just trying to get some, like a birthday party. It'd be fun to have this for a birthday party, right? Just some fun activities. I love the way you charge this thing with this. It's kind of clever because then you don't have to have a USB port on the ball. I was worried about that.
Right.
These charging pins really are small and don't get in the way at all. This device, you know, you have to keep it. If you lose it, the ball's...
And I would like to see my kids play this more than Roblox.
Right. Yeah, there you go. The impossible game ball. All right, let's play a game with one of our callers because it's time for Follow Me, a call for help. On the line right now for our call for help, it's Scott from Dayton, Ohio. I'm a little out of breath from the impossible ball. Hi, Scott from Dayton, Ohio.
Hi, Leo. Hi, Alex.
Scott, hey. Do you have kids? You think they'd be interested in this?
I don't have kids.
Yeah.
I think I could use it for martial arts training, though.
Oh, that's interesting. You're a martial arts instructor.
Yes.
What martial art do you teach?
I train in a traditional Korean martial art called Tangsudo.
It does kind of remind me of the ball that Obi-Wan Kenobi taught Luke.
Yeah, if you just get hover.
If it would just float in space. How do you think you might use this in instructing?
I actually started in a very confined space when I started. We trained in a basement, and we actually had balls hung from the ceiling instead of heavy bags to work on targeting.
Yeah, and this is because it's got an accelerometer, and it's very sensitive to motion, but also it could be getting tapped and rotated. It's kind of cool. What can we do for you, Scott?
Well, I'll tell you, as part of the martial arts instruction, we've been starting to use video as an instructional tool. It's really good when you're there with each other and you can take video and replay and comment on what you're doing, and students make improvements very quickly. As a student myself, I'm a little bit separated from my instructor. He lives about an hour and a half away from me. And so we're starting to collaborate with an asynchronous video collaboration where I can take video and then send it to him. And what we want to be able to do is for him to be able to make comments on that video that are time-based. So right now we've been playing around with it a little bit, and it's kind of difficult because, you know, we can take video very easily. We can share it. There's all kinds of tools to do that. But then you kind of have to say, well, at 45 seconds, you did this, right, or you need to look at this. And that's kind of difficult to get on the same page. So I'm looking for a tool, kind of like commenting in a document where the comment is attached to what you're looking at. So kind of a time-based commenting system for video to start with.
You know, I'm going to let you answer this because this is your Alex's bailiwick. But, you know, would this work for you? I think about how maybe a soccer commentator or a football commentator would take a video, telestrated, right?
Right.
And I think that would be, it seems to me that your instructor, if he could have the video on a screen and say, see right here, your kick needs to be straighter, and actually draw a line, annotate it with a pen, and maybe be able to slow it down, speed it up, scrub through it, and make a second video that has all of that.
Yeah,
does absolutely. That sound like something you'd want to do, Scott?
Yeah, that sounds kind of perfect, and the easier the better, because I'm kind of a nerd and I can handle a lot of the heavy lifting, but I kind of want to share this with other instructors and students as well.
Yeah. I'm thinking the Surface Studio or any Windows device that has a pen.
And the pen is useful. I think that to get started, I mean, if you don't want to have any kind of hardware... there is another. There's an app that we use in the visual effects industry and in the ad industry online. My parents have actually used it.
When you do those commentaries,
that's my own hardware. That's very complicated.
So Alex does something very similar. He'll look at TV, newsrooms and stuff, and be snarky about it. And he'll do it.
Like, I'm giving constructive criticism.
You'll do exactly that, though. You'll take a pen and you'll say, you see this? That's a terrible chroma key.
Yeah, and so that is a pretty custom-built system that's not trivial to put together.
Okay, and probably not cheap either.
No.
Okay.
No. But this one is. This one actually is. What's interesting is the first Mac break that we ever did.
Way back.
Remember back at Macworld? And we ran around. And
yeah.
So there was a guy that we worked with there, Emery Wells.
Yeah.
Remember Emery?
I know Emery well.
Emery created an app that is the perfect solution for what you need. And it's become kind of the standard within the ad community, visual effects, even people just doing edits. And it's called Frame.io, frame.io. And you can see it here on my laptop here. Now, this is my son actually getting scanned at PixelGun, but I just grabbed a video so we can show it. But what you can do is, I think it's free to start just doing basic ones. When you start adding larger teams, you have to start paying for it. But basically, you can scan through. You know, you can go here. You can just hit play if you want. And so you can kind of play here. Now, if you decide you want to draw on it, you just simply click this button.
Oh, perfect.
And now you can start to draw like this here. See this? See his eyes are going this way or whatever. Now, when you did that, when you stopped and did that, if I hit send, it's actually, you see over here, it's actually time-stamped that in the here. So now you can jump. You can literally click to where that is in the scene. So all the comments, you simply click on it and it jumps to that part of the video. And if you want to draw on it, you can. You could put obviously more text in there. This is a really inexpensive, easy to use, works. It's a web-based app, so it's going to work anywhere. You can actually you'll see up here, I have a little icon. I'm not logged in at the moment, but you can actually have it have a watch folder, so you just throw stuff into the watch folder, it automatically puts it up into the group. You can invite a bunch of people to be part of this. We were doing an edit for my father, and we actually, my dad and my mom actually used it and gave all their comments and circled things and everything else. So it's very easy to use and relatively inexpensive. I think that
any computer would be able to do this as long as you have a browser, right?
Any browser. It works on every browser. It is super slick. So I guess there's a starter plan, $15 a month. But I think you can download it, and there's some
kind
of...
It's got a two-week trial.
You can test it for free, yeah.
Yeah.
One project. So you can do a couple things with it to try it out. It's super smooth. It works really well. Emery's got it. He comes out of the design world. So everything just works really well. I mean, this is the Apple of feedback tools. And anyway, it's used a lot in our industry. It just came out a couple years ago and has really picked up speed. They had a big, they raised a lot of money, so now there's a lot of hardware behind it.
The one thing I can imagine is, like, for instance, Scott would do a kick, and you'd like to see that whole kick. You can't annotate a motion. You can only annotate a frame.
Currently, yeah, and currently that's the thing. It'll be hard to draw on it while it's moving as well.
Yeah.
So that you're gonna oftentimes stop. You know, while it's working anyway.
Right.
But you can hit play and get to where you want, and you can have multiple annotations. Because what you're really going to look at, right, is where your hips are, or where your center of gravity is, where your shoulders are, the extension out. Those types of things are going to be things you want to say. Well, look at how you're not pulling all the way out, or your hand, your thumb is in like this, or all those little things.
You could, in a very primitive way, sort of do this if you had a camera. A video camera, even on a smartphone, and a tablet, like let's say an iPad with a pencil, he could watch the video, record him watching the video, stop, scrub,
yep.
Annotate it with the pen, and just record a video of him, of the sensei going through all of that, and then send a video back.
Yes,
but it'd be kind of a primitive way of doing it.
Yeah, you could definitely do it without any. You could definitely grab that and kind of draw on it.
Yeah.
You're right; a Surface would do it as well. The nice thing about this is you just upload the video and you say everyone.
I kind of like that.
It works super, super smooth.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's one of those things that when it first came out, I was like, I don't really get it. And now, I mean, we use it for every project.
No, just because I'm curious. When you do the annotations that you do, you still do those?
I took a little time off.
What do you call that?
It's called the teardown. It's on our Pixel Core channel on YouTube, and what happened was I complain
too.
A lot when I watch TV, and someone said you should record.
This is why you don't want to sit down next to Alex.
An open animation. Now, what we're trying to do is get to this master frame. This
news.
Is the master frame here. This is where you want.
And this
everything
is exactly
so what you, do is you set this as a keyframe, and then you and it's a very fairly straightforward. You set that keyframe, and then you back up. And you set all your keyframes.
This is
so
Alex
all
talking
your
about how they do
here.
The graphics.
This is up
yeah,
here.
So
this
I'm
is
talking, this the idea was not so much to complain completely, but also talk about how it works.
So you set those up,
and
you set those keyframes.
And I think there's part here where I complain about there, where you'll see where I get kind of
you get snarky.
This is it.
if you get that, you know, those long polygons in there, you're going to end up with aliasing, which is exactly what you see here. And the best way to fix that is to fix the geometry and then render it again.
Nobody ever saw it. So close.
So, so now let's move forward with this basic animation here.
So this is exactly in a different field, exactly what he's talking about.
Yeah, yeah.
But absolutely. What do you use to do this?
It's a lot of
Telestrator, right?
It's a lot of hardware that I built from scratch to make that work. Yeah. It does a lot of other things, and we're in the middle of writing the patents, so I can't talk about it on the show. But that version is just a Telestrator, but it's a homemade Telestrator for that.
I'm just trying to think if there's any other. You know, I use it all the time when I use my Surface Studio. I can capture a frame and annotate it. That's a really nice feature.
I think the Surface does a lot of great things, you know, with that. It's just a matter of where the hardware is. You know, the nice thing about doing something on the web is that you can do it easily anywhere you're at. You can just kind of open it up and work through it. I think that you definitely could build hardware that gave you better feedback. The other thing that's going to be interesting, the thing that I'm interested in when I was thinking about your question is if you took something like Oculus Medium, you know, and you had motion capture, which eventually the motion capture suits extends, I think. These motion capture suits that you put on, you could theoretically be watching your instructor do the moves, and then you could do them, and the martial art your instructor could put your headset on, and literally in 3D be drawing the correction, you know, and drawing the lines of where you want to go, and so on and so forth. And I think that that may sound really out there right now, but I think we're probably less than 5 years from someone, you know, doing that.
It feels like this is a kind of collaboration you're going to see a lot more of. This is a really great way to do teaching and instructing.
And I think this is where AR and VR are going to be really, really interesting.
Oh, imagine
you know,
that.
That's the, yeah. you know, I think that that's yeah. the piece where we really start to, especially as the headsets get more sleek and less bulky, that you could wear them while you're doing a form. You know, you could be able to, you know, do. There'd be a lot more that could be done.
So
we've already started playing with a little bit of markerless motion capture, a little bit, but the inexpensive hardware that you can get, it's just not quite there yet. And then the software to really do it is kind of out of my price range right now. But I played around with it a little bit, just using Xbox and Sony cameras.
Yeah, we brought my cousin is a fifth degree black belt in Myeongdo, and he came out and we a pretty big motion capture system. We had him do it, and it's just amazing.
Just to get it on.
Just to capture it. Yeah. And it was just amazing to. What's interesting is that it captures so much detail that. And we bought the motion capture system to do exercise motion capture, you know, and it tells you like where those hips are, which makes all the difference, you know, whether you're doing an exercise or a martial arts move. Where are your hips? Where is your mass? And you can see all of that. And then when you start to. We did. A piece where we took the markers and we just started doing traces, you know, where it just leaves a line, and it just becomes you suddenly becomes this huge motion, and it's beautiful when the person who does it is good at it, and horrible when people like me do it, but you really see where the kinks are, and like when you do the traces, when someone's doing this, you'll see the kinks in their motion, what you could go back and look at is when you look at those kinks. You can see, their shoulder started off a little too far this way. And you can make corrections that would be very difficult to make in real time.
There's stuff like this for golfers.
Oh, yeah. Well, golfers.
Swing analysis.
There's whole.
Batters, major
colleges,
league baseball.
Colleges and pros, I mean, they have all kinds of these tools that are analyzing the swing, analyzing the throw, analyzing the jump. All of those things are being done all the time.
It's amazing. So frame.io sounds like. The free version.
I think that's the easiest. The free version is the place to start. See if you like it. The base version isn't very expensive. It's just the easiest, quickest way to do this. I couldn't think of any other quick and easy way to put it together.
And that's nice. You could even do it with students because all they need is a browser. So you could, you know, once you've got the video, you put it in there. You can send them a link, and they can look at the commentary.
And you can see that it works on. You can also look at it on your phone, on your iPad. So,
Emery did a nice job with that. That's cool.
Yeah.
Glad we can give them a
quick
plug.
Question about that. If you have that set up and you have an account, can you invite another commenter to come in, like either the student or maybe a second instructor?
Yep, absolutely. So I think that the way I think it works is that you pay to have you can have X number of collaborators per, you know, depending on your membership, but it's all part of that. and I can't remember exactly what the billing is, but there you go. You got 10 collaborators. So the starter plan, you could put up to 10 gigs of storage. You can have up to 3 projects at a time. So remember that you can.
A project could be one video.
You could have a project that is all of our work together, and then you can put up to 10 gigs of videos up as one project.
That would be enough for a class.
Exactly. And then you can have collaborators, right. Up to 10 collaborators at a time talking through it. So I think one basic membership would be probably all you needed to get started, unless it really turns into a big deal, and then it would not be a big deal to add more.
Right.
Scott, you're a chemist, I'm told. You work for the Department of Defense.
Yes, I am.
Can you explain what's going on in the periodic table of elements in your T-shirt? It doesn't look good.
Well, in this particular one, Chuck Norris is destroying the periodic table. That's the element Chuck Norium. So he's doubly radioactive. So
you don't want any Chuck Norium. This is good. This is a good lesson. Never get any Chuck Norium in your periodic.
It's such a great mix of chemist and martial artist.
It's perfect. Your T-shirts.
Yeah.
Exactly. Right.
Hey, it's great to talk to you. Thanks for calling. I appreciate it.
Thank you both very much.
That's a great answer. I like Frame.io, and I'm glad. I remember Emery very well. He was great.
Yeah.
That's nice. I'm glad he's got something. Gainful employ. Next week, just kidding. Next week, Megan Maroney, our guest, our co-host. Let's see how you can ask her a question on the show.
Need tech help? The new screensavers are here with answers. Email your tech questions to newscreensavers@twit.tv.
We have the mailbag. We're going to wrap things up in just a little bit. But first, Jason Howell with some must-have travel gadgets.
We're in the thickest summer, and often that means hitting the road on our way to the many adventures that await us. In fact, that's where I'm at right now. Well, actually, I recorded this before my road trip, but at this very moment when you're watching it, I'm camping in the wilderness with my family. And just because we're camping doesn't mean we left technology back at home. We put technology to work for us this road trip with a few key gadgets that I'm going to show off right now. First, what do you do when your car stereo doesn't work anymore, like the one in my old Subaru? You either pay to get it replaced or you get lazy, like I do. Matt Kinney heard me lamenting about my car stereo woes on All About Android recently and pointed me towards the Anker Rove Smart Charge Car Kit for $29.99. I've been really impressed with the quality of the FM transmission on this. There's a feature in the companion app that actually boosts the signal, and it makes a very noticeable difference in the quality of the sound. Even better is the onboard Bluetooth 4.2 receiver for wireless audio transmission. There are a few hardware controls on its face for doing things like answering the phone, skipping tracks, that kind of stuff while you're driving, plus a digital readout so you know which station to tune to your radio. And the companion app makes station selection very straightforward. There are two USB charging ports on top that support Anker's Power IQ 2.0 technology. It basically detects and outputs the proper voltage for a given connected device, all the way up to 2.4 amps of charge, which is enough for many modern smartphones, though my Pixel 2 XL would totally love to have this with a USB power delivery. There's an onboard microphone for taking calls and an auxiliary out port for lining this directly into your car stereo if it isn't broken like mine is. After listening to podcasts through my phone's car speaker in the car for nearly 2 years, this new setup is a dream. Now, when I'm camping, I often wish we had some way to power up a device that requires DC power. Sure, I have battery banks that can jump my car and provide my mobile devices with juice, but portable DC power is a different story. Well, Megan Maroney loaned me this, the Saber Power Bank, for my trip. It's a large and in charge battery stick that basically puts my power needs to bed. First, it's huge, almost a foot long and 2.2 pounds heavy. In other words, if a bear attacks, I might actually have a chance. But beyond its battle performance, all that girth makes it super rugged and ready for the elements. It offers 24,000 milliamp hours of capacity, two USB charging ports with varying degrees of output up to 2.5 amps, a speedy USB-C charging port, and for maximum utility on the other end, and the thing I really love, an AC outlet, which means you can basically plug anything in there and get power for it. On top of that, the DC input charger takes only 2 hours to restore the Saber to its full charging potential. The sucker is loaded, but it's a little pricey at $299. Finally, this one's a few years old, but it's a staple on our camping trips. It's the Bose SoundLink Mini Bluetooth Speaker 2. I'm a sucker for Bose products, and this little guy is no different. It's a small form factor Bluetooth speaker pair encased in a nice, rugged aluminum body that withstands dust and dirt nicely. It weighs around 1.5 pounds, which I appreciate because portable Bluetooth speakers often feel kind of cheap and hollow. This feels tight and substantial by comparison. For its small size, music fills the campsite incredibly well. It's perfect for my girls' post-dinner dance shows in front of the campfire. It does have a 3.5 millimeter jack for analog audio input, but the Bluetooth works great for wirelessly connecting up to two devices at once with a total of eight devices that can actually be stored in memory. Now, the buttons on top control power, volume, Bluetooth toggling, of course, and then there's an included multifunction button in the center that does things like pausing audio, taking a call if you get reception, and a whole lot more. And it charges via mini USB and not some proprietary plug. The Bose SoundLink Mini 2 costs $179.95 right now. That's actually down from $200. Anyways, happy travels this summer, and maybe I'll see you on the road. If not, you can see me on All About Android, Tech News Weekly, Triangulation, and many more shows here on twit.tv.
Thank you, Jason Howell. You catch Jason every Thursday on Tech News Weekly, and of course every Tuesday on All About Android. I didn't mention this Impossible Ball has a Apple TV app, so this would be a fun thing as a party game you could put up on your TV and play the games we've been playing.
And eventually break your TV.
Yes. Throw
That's
it really
how that
hard
turns out.
At your
yeah,
TV.
Exactly.
Yeah. And you asked, of course, the obvious question for you. Does it have an API? And they say they don't have an API yet. There's no way you can write games for it, but they're considering it. So if you're interested, you should email.
If they're watching, you're nuts. Like
this would be huge. You wouldn't have to write all the games anymore,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
It's kind of an interesting idea. Now the next thing to do is to put a Raspberry Pi in a ball
inside of a ball
and see if you can duplicate the functionality. I bet you could.
I don't think you need to put the Raspberry Pi inside. I think you just need the various sensors.
You see the sensors and Bluetooth. Some way of communicating, yeah.
I'm sure it would cost more than $100 to figure it out, though.
What if we made martial arts gloves and boots?
Well, I think that the idea of quantitizing all these kinds of things is going to be... Quantitizing reality is fun. The future.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's been the future for a long time. You know, we've thought that's what... But figuring that out, I think, is going to be really exciting. You know, as we start to see it... you could change whole games. If you think about the game of golf, if you had all this AR and all kinds of other things, you could have people on the golf course playing a game that wasn't even the game that we know of as golf, because their balls are being tracked and their swings are being tracked, and they could be doing something completely different. It could change. You know, that's just one example of many.
That's the lesson from this right away, is you could take something as simple as a ball and have a dozen different things to do that are
Which
hard.
We always did. We always had fun things that we did with the ball, but
can
now
you get
it's something
that's... the ball over the wire or whatever.
It adds all this extra
over
data
the house.
To it.
That is going to be the theme of this show, was quantizing the physical world.
Yep.
That's what this was about. Let's get our mailbag in here, and we're going to let Tony do the honors. Tony teaches video at...
San Leandro High School.
And has a setup that is better than ours. I'm infinitely jealous.
I just said it was great. I didn't say it was better than...
TriCasters, cameras. Those are lucky high school kids. That's a public school?
Uh-huh.
That's really awesome. How did you get all the gear?
Just
Alex Lindsay. Nice.
Grants.
That's great, Tony. Yeah.
And a lot of hard work. And success. It turns out if you're successful, I mean, I watch what the kids do, and it's just amazing.
It's just
a really great, great environment.
Yeah. Yeah, the kids are lucky if they get a teacher like you. That's great. Pick an email, any email. All right. This is the final portion of the show, which we answer email questions. You may start, Mr. L.
This is from Ryan Ewell.
Do you know him?
Yeah, yes. Self-directed learning is the best way to supplement any education when it comes to multimedia and specifically video. What sites, resources, or people do you recommend following, joining, participating in as someone tries to increase their knowledge, skills, proficiency on their own?
This is in response to a tweet you put out a couple
of times. I did. I tweeted. I was like, hey, I'm going to be on the new Screensavers. What do you got? So anyway, The go-to ones for me are, so lynda.com is kind of a gimme.
Now it's Microsoft Learning, but it's
they continue to put out just a lot of
really
a lot
stuff.
Of good content.
Yeah.
It's going to cover a lot of things for $25. I think it's still $25 a month. It's a no-brainer.
And we know and so, a lot of instructors.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, it's LinkedIn Learning owned by Microsoft. Yeah.
Right. And then I also I do a lot of Cinema 4D stuff, so Cineversity is a great tool for learning when you're doing 3D. If you're using Cinema 4D, it's only Cinema 4D, but it's a great tool for that.
Yeah.
Then there's also for the higher end stuff, there's FX PhD that is a place where you can take some of the classes. Those are the places that, and then after that, it's just YouTube. You know, like you it's amazing what you can search, and somebody has thought of it. When I tried to figure out, you know, when I got into PhotoScan, which is this photogrammetry that we were talking about earlier, I spent hours just going through it. Now, you know, they're not perfect, you know, as far as the quality of all of the videos. But you get, oh, right, that's a new tool that I can use. And so a lot of it is still nugging through it. I don't think that we're at a point where, you know, I think the problem right now with video instruction and self-driven pieces is the what I would call the content density. You know, how much you get per second while you're watching it is very low. You know, because people don't have a lot of budget. But that's slowly increasing. I think that you're watching lynda.com, for instance, just slowly turn that dial. Mm. You know, like, you know, where they now have little studio mm-hmm. stuff, and they're not, it's not all just screen captures, mm-hmm. you know. And so it is going to get better. I think that one of the things that we're hoping to do later this year is we started doing some stuff with the Pixel Core again, you know, on Patreon. And we're going to continue on a couple different platforms to do more challenge-based stuff. Like, I'm going to tell you know, everybody.
I like
go,
that.
I think that it's really hard to just kind of watch.
Right.
You know, what we're working on, what we've been trying to formulate, starting and stopping formulating right now, is I'm going to give you a couple videos, and I'm going to then challenge you to do something, and then we're all going to have a live discussion. So take the live, the live stuff that we do a lot of, and let's have a live discussion and talk, look at people, what people did, answer their questions, have a discussion with them. But I think those components, you know, of having it something to work on, and then having your questions answered and having some videos that kind of help you along the way are kind of the key components that I think are there that I don't see anybody doing really well. So we're hoping to do a little bit more of it on our own. But I think that as far as the ones that are out there, I think that, you know, lynda.com is still the kind of the go-to for a lot of the video stuff.
You nailed it. I mean, there's really no lack of information.
Right.
And my son has taught himself how to cook from YouTube videos.
Right.
But it is the quality, not only the quality of information, but the quality of the delivery varies widely. And the quality of engaging you varies widely. I do think, and I think you should take a look at, there are online MOOCs, massively online mm-hmm. educational things, that have done a pretty good job. I've been taking a series of courses in computer programming from a MOOC created by Harvard and MIT called EDX. It's edx.org. Mm-hmm. So you can take the classes for free.
Right.
It's really a magical time for a learner now. I mean,
right.
If you want to learn something, really the challenge is not finding stuff where you can learn this, it's finding stuff where it's done well. EDX has some, and what they've mastered is exactly what you mentioned, which is the mix of instruction to hands-on.
Right.
And if you're watching videos on coding or Blender or 3D animation and you're not doing it, you're really not learning it. You're absorbing a lot of stuff, but you're not learning how to do it. You've got to do it. So they have short, very short, 3 or 4 minute, at least the case course I'm taking, 3 or 4 minute videos with an instructor who talks about stuff. He will sometimes pause in the video because you have an interactive programming environment that goes along with the course and say, all right, I want you to do the next two in this starter assignment that we've given you, and then press play to continue on. Or he'll stop the video. There'll be quizzes. They have online quizzes. And they even have projects and timed tests. So they have used a lot of the different tools
yep.
to get you working. I spent 2 or 3 weeks on the final project, much more time probably than I would have in college. I would have spent a couple of hours.
Right.
But I had the luxury, because it's a self-paced learning experience, to really spend some time on it. And I think I learned more because of that.
Yeah,
but you have to be motivated to do it.
Yeah, and I think that the finding a way to kind of tie everybody in socially so that they're talking to each other.
That's another thing they do. They have a forum.
Right.
The instructor will do office hours in which he'll answer questions on video, but they also have a forum that peers can say, right. Boy, this was a hard one. How did you figure this out? And that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And that's been really great.
And it's going to keep getting better.
One thing they have to do, though, in there is say, you could get answers by going outside the course. We ask that you don't. You know, you could Google it. We ask that you don't because we want you to learn how to do it yourself. We want you to learn it within the framework of the course. So while you could probably solve this problem by Googling it, please don't. Please spend some time thinking about it. And that really is discipline on the learner's part, the discipline to keep doing it, to kind of focus. But if you can learn how to do that, man, the world is your oyster.
Well, and thinking about, to me, I mean, how I've learned everything is projects. You know,
doing it.
I told you that I could do multi-cam video for Twit, and I had no idea. And so then I figured it out, you know, and so it was painful.
So the trick is promise something to somebody. That you don't
exactly.
know how to do.
That you don't know how to do. And then you figure it out.
Yeah,
you know, that's a. And, but, you know, a lot of the, you know, I'm learning, I'm digging much deeper into Arduino because I have a, you know, I have a pump that I'm trying to control with my phone. And it became this project. The pump was proprietary. So now I have to watch the traffic, you know, between its proprietary tool and this so I can figure out what's going on. And so I'm learning all this stuff about pumps and about Arduino and about everything else because I have a project. And so the thing is, and, you know, I've one of the things we say internally is when we're trying to think about what to do next is every problem is a product, but every problem is also a project. You know, so if there's something you're frustrated about, figure out a way to fix it, and then you with technology and or with video or with whatever.
Yeah,
and,
but you know, you're unique in that respect. You have that mindset. You've learned so much because you do take that as a challenge, and then you bite into it and you learn it and you solve it
and fail often.
But you're not typical. I think there are a lot of people who would just say, "Yeah, it's too hard," and not do it. So
well, and the key is to be okay with. I have a lot of undone
it's okay if
projects.
It doesn't work.
I have a lot of undone projects. I kind of go down that path. I learn a couple things, and then I decided that it was too steep for right now. I'll come back to it. Some projects I start on and off for years. You know, it's not something that if I'm not making money with it, I don't.
Right.
If I'm making money with it, then I figure it out and end it. You know, like make sure it works.
Right.
But if it's my personal projects, take a long time because I'm not.
Right.
You know, I just kind of fiddle with them, but they allow me to think through it, and then I do a bunch of searching, and then I watch a bunch of videos and ask people that are smarter than me. You know,
I think a lot of the people who watch our shows are that kind of person.
Yep.
But I do think that if you are that kind of person, you live in a golden age right now of learning.
Oh,
this
yeah.
is the best time to be. If you're a good learner and a self-starter, boy, what a great time.
I remember learning programming when I was, you know, 10.
Yeah.
And there were in 1980, there was nothing.
Right.
I mean, there was a handful of magazines and you'd buy the magazine and then learning how to
type
code
it
was,
in.
You'd sit there and type in your bit and
all
you'd look
you're
at
learning
it
is the pain of typing things in.
Exactly.
And of typos.
Yep. Yeah, exactly.
Now you've got Khan Academy, you've got iTunes University, you've got a dozen different ways to learn online. You've got commercial entities like LinkedIn Learning.
Yep.
There really is an endless supply. This is from K Jewett 2. From the Twitter. I think this is for you, too. In your daily work, Alex Lindsay. Hi, K. Jewett. Are you always trying new apps, or do you stay with the same proven standard apps? And if so, what are the five you use most often?
Well,
great question, K. Thank you.
Yeah, it's a good question. I think I'm almost constantly testing new apps.
That's an occupational hazard for people like us.
Yeah.
Certainly, if we're covering apps, when you do Mac Break Weekly, you always want to have a new pick of the week. So there's an occupational hazard that really makes us a little different than a normal person.
And it's apps, it's hardware, it's, you know, I'm constantly, you know.
I think it's fun.
No, I mean, I do too. It's
not normal.
And I watch someone post something or someone will recommend something and I immediately download it and start playing with
it. That's actually so great on Mac Break Weekly because invariably, during our recommendations at the end, I'll buy whatever it is. You'll install whatever it is. We're all
that's
you can
the most
watch everybody
part of the
doing
show
that.
For
yeah.
Us.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool. Let me try that. Yeah. And I think it's that spirit, though, is a good spirit. I think that's the kind of thing you
that. And again, when we talk about golden age, this is the golden age to have that. It used to be you have to buy it. You pay $600 for it or $3,000.
It's amazing.
For it, now you download the demo, and the demo works perfectly.
Or you buy a $5 app, and if it didn't work great, it's $5.
It's a coffee. It was a bad coffee. And so I think definitely on the phone, and even to some degree, you know, and part of what's made that work is this kind of, at least on the Apple side, the sandbox thing where they really can know that you're actually buying it, you know, to some degree. It has made it easier to charge less, you know, for it. Because a lot of times you're taking into account, all the people that weren't paying for it, you know. And so I think that, we're all benefiting from that to some degree. There's definitely apps that I use a lot.
Give me five that you have to have.
The Interestingly, the one I was trying to think of ones, and one that I don't think of as an app that I use all the time, but the one that I pay attention to a lot is iStat Menu. I don't know if you
on your Macintosh.
On my Mac, iStat is this thing that every computer. I'm like, if we have a computer that doesn't have it, I'm like, why didn't we have iStat on here? Because if you have a problem, it tells you, oh, it's still transferring data, or what's going on with my CPU, or
it
what's
shows
going on.
CPU activity, temperature, drive, and I/O activity. It even has the weather. And it all goes in your menu bar at the top of the screen. I use it on my I only use it on is iMac Pro because I always want to know. I bought 10 cores. Are any of them actually working?
Right.
Most of the time.
Well, and I know that if I'm running compressor, if it doesn't run full tilt, I forgot to turn
on the
instancing, and you know, there's a whole bunch of things that I can look at. Photoshop.
Good program. I like it.
I've played with a lot of other programs. I'm still playing with them, but Photoshop is still. You know, I'm an old fogey when it comes to editing software, so Photoshop is still a...
Is there anything you see that's a competitor out there? Pixelmator?
I think that Pixelmator and Affinity...
Affinity is amazing.
Those are great contenders. Affinity I use because when I shoot 360 photos, Affinity lets you go into a live view, look down where your tripod was, and paint it out with a clone tool without, you know, where you can actually see the details.
Right.
And so, it's kind of the only thing I know to do that really easily. Although I think you can now do it in Final Cut, which is another one that I use probably almost every day is Final Cut. As far as, you know, I cut all my little videos or anything I'm, you know, cutting up, it's all being done in Final Cut.
Nice.
As far as the editing goes, notes, we were talking about this on Mac Break.
Just the plain comes with the Mac, costs nothing. Apple Notes program.
My life like lives inside. Because here's the thing: is that I don't want to install a bunch of apps. I don't want to do it like what it works on every device.
Yeah, you know, syncs.
It's like as soon as I write it, I can share it. So if I do a checklist, hey, I'll tell my wife that I'm going to go to the market. What do you need? And what I'll do is I'll share a Notes thing, just like you would share a Google Doc.
Right.
And then she starts adding stuff that she wants, and it's in the checklist
form. It's great
form,
if you're all Apple, iPhone, iPad, Macintosh.
Right.
It doesn't go outside of that universe. Google Keep does.
Right.
It does much of the same thing, but, you know, it doesn't come with it.
I think because my world is very segmented. So we use Linux boxes for all of our encoding and our stitching for 360.
But
we
don't need notes on that.
No, and I don't even look inside of it. I just, you know, and then we use Windows for very heavy lifting graphics, and I'm not usually, but my day-to-day life
you're sitting in front of
lives
Apple
inside
product.
Of an Apple product, you know.
Yep. Well, thank you, Alex Lindsay. It's always a pleasure to have you
here. It's great to be here.
AlexLindsay on Twitter. That's the best way to keep up with what Alex is up to, at Alex Lindsay. And unlike the rest of us, his follower count's always going up.
Just barely.
Just a little bit of a time. Mine's been going down like 500 a month every month.
Mine goes up by like two every month.
I want to do an A-B experiment, like see if generally it goes up if I post nothing. The more I post, the more I lose people. So
that's because you upset people.
My advice, I mean, it's the way it's Twitter. I bet it's true for everybody. My advice, you want to succeed on Twitter, say nothing. Just don't use Twitter.
But it'll be that one post though that gets shared over and over and over again. Then everyone goes, oh, I'm going to follow that person.
Alex is a regular on Mac Break Weekly. He's not here every week because he's always working. But if he's here, it's always a lot of fun. Every Tuesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern. That would be 1800 UTC. And, of course, the new Screensavers is here every Saturday afternoon, about 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, 2200 UTC. Either of those shows, in fact, all of our shows are streamed live during the production phase. You're not going to see the finished product, but you're going to see us making the sausage, as it were. And you can do that watching live at our website, twit.tv/live. We have links to all the different streams. If you want to watch live on a Roku or an Apple TV, probably the easiest thing to do. There are actually quite a few Apple TV apps. The Roku app no longer works because Roku changed their API and we're too cheap to write it again. So you can always use YouTube. We're streaming live on YouTube. Ustream, Twitch, and now the new Mixer app on many platforms. You can just look for Twit and you'll find our live stream. If you are watching the live stream, please join us in the chat room. That's where the community hangs out. That's irc.twit.tv. We'd also love having you in studio. We had a great studio audience today. If you want to join us in the studio, all you have to do is email tickets at twit.tv. There's no charge for the tickets. We just like to know ahead of time how many people are going to be here. Tickets at twit.tv. If you want to subscribe to the newsletter, that'll give you some idea of what's coming up in the week ahead. Jerry puts that together every Sunday. You just go to twit.tv/newsletter and subscribe. twit.tv/store if you want to buy merch. What else? For this show, if you want to download copies after the fact, twit.tv/NSS for new screen savers, or search for new screen savers in your favorite podcast app and you will find us, and you can subscribe and you get audio or video the minute it's available. Thanks for watching. We'll see you next week on the new screen savers. Bye-bye.
Yay.